You are listening to Wells Tech, episode 588, recorded on Tuesday, February 12th, 2019, intranets, Google style. Wells Tech is a weekly podcast exploring the intersections of technology and ministry. It is part of the podcast network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Our show today is hosted by Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. It's all about intranets today, Google style. Lots of different tools available for a congregation wanting to build a private network for very low cost. And Google Drive and Google Sites and Google Docs all are great tools to make that happen. Sally's going to be going through her experiences with setting that up. We have some news in tech, some reminders about the Wells EdTech Lead Conference and a special event that's going to go on there. Sally's got another Google pick of the week, and I'm talking a little bit about Trello power-ups. All that and more coming right up. Hello again, everybody. Welcome back to Wells Tech. This is episode 588. Joining me, as usual, my podcasting partner, Sally Draper. Good morning, Sally.
Good morning. We don't normally say that, Martin, but we are recording at 10:30 a.m., just a little bit of juggled
Central
schedule
Central Standard
today.
Time. Yep.
So maybe we'll be a little sharper. People will have to let us know if we came across better with a morning podcast than an afternoon one.
That'd be a nice surprise. Or I'm not sure if it would be, but we're going to do our best. Lots of things to talk about. We have always, I don't know that we've ever had a shortage of topics. And this is one that we've kind of, it's so big, you know, that we've spread out across the months as kind of a theme. And that's intranets, church, specifically church intranets. And I know that we've talked to a number of people about intranets. We've used intranets ourselves in the past and currently. But I think it's still kind of an unknown for a lot of congregations, a lot of churches trying to figure out how to create, capture, collaborate, and store information. I think those are kind of the main uses of an intranet, right?
Yep, I'm going to write that down. That was pretty
I was just off
amazing.
The top of my head. I must be a little sharper today.
Create, capture, and collaborate? Is that what you said?
I don't remember what I said, Sally.
We'll have to rewind. Anyway, right. Yeah. And you know, Martin, the series is intended to get into school intranets as well. So if you're listening from the school perspective, just hang on a couple of months because we're going to focus on school intranets coming up a few months from now. But definitely focusing on church intranets today. And churches are multi-legged animals. They have all kinds of people involved in all kinds of different angles of ministry, internal ministry, just keeping things up to date for who's doing what for worship services and choir singing and ushers and all those kind of things. Then there's external ministries like outreach efforts or whatever that you want to coordinate. There's events at churches, all kinds of things that take planning and potentially sharing or collaborating of information. And what better thing to do than turn to the web to do that rather than expecting everybody to show up and get their pieces of paper every day that have information
right.
on it. Let's make use of the gifts that God's given us with the internet, and in particularly in a private way, so that this isn't like your public website. This is a private place where people have credentials to get access to this information that's involved in the planning around churches.
And that's a good point. I think a number of churches kind of use their public website as a way to share information with their members. And I think to some degree, that's okay if you're thinking of just general communications. But when you get down to these sub-ministries, the altar guilds, the usher groups, the church council, the youth ministry team, etc., that stuff you don't really want to litter up your public website presence with. And I think your public presence should be more focused and maybe a lot more visitor friendly. And then with the tools that we're going to talk about here, there's really no reason, there's not a lot of obstacles or barriers between you and effective communication in a private place or a place where it's easily accessed, but you feel comfortable sharing and collaborating. And another thing that I thought of as you were talking, Sally, is that I think we live in an age where it's very difficult to get all the people together at the same time mm-hmm. in the same place and have these meetings and share this information. So I think more and more these kinds of tools, these intranet kinds of tools, are super helpful in getting that information to all the people that, you know, in between meetings perhaps, or maybe even if they're not having regular meetings, there's that flow of communication is still not going to be challenged. You've got free access.
Definitely. You know, intranets are a great idea, and we're pumped up for this on Wells Tech and everything, but it's only as good as the people who use it. So right. One of the key things you always have to keep in mind is keeping it simple. I called it KISS, not keep it simple, stupid, but keep it simple, Sally, as I was struggling with, you know.
Keep it simple, Spriggs.
There you go.
I could go with that too. Yeah.
Struggling with how to explain this, how to give people an idea, a vision of what this could do for them. And ultimately, it can only do these things for you if people can get to it easily enough and if it's easy to maintain and things like that. So you can do this in a really slick way. You can have lots of bells and whistles. You can make it really pretty, or you can do it really bare bones. And ultimately, what matters is the content you're putting out there. The fact that a year from now, when it's time to decorate the church again, you aren't going to remember which of the groups is responsible for that because you have a rotation and you got to have somewhere to write that down and reference it. So just having it documented and easily accessible is probably the number one goal.
Mm-hmm. So I am excited, Sally, today because you put a little elbow grease into maybe kicking the tires on some possible approaches to this using good old-fashioned Google tools, Google Sites, Google Drive, Google Docs, those kinds of things. So we don't have the benefit of video mm-hmm. here, although maybe we can produce a screencast
yeah,
of what
definitely.
You're going to be talking about. But maybe you can walk us through what you kind of uncovered in your exploration of whether Google is a good intranet candidate.
Well, you know, Martin, keeping those things in mind and also relying heavily on a friend, actually a Wells Tech kind of guru that has contributed many times throughout the years in Wells Tech. That's Pastor Rob Gunther, because Pastor Gunther has set up intranets in his congregation in Alaska, and he's starting that work again as in his new call at St. John's in New Ulm. And mm-hmm. he was willing to share so we could kind of look behind the curtain and just have an idea of the structure, the way he's done this successfully in his congregations. And with that vision, I really set out initially to set up a Google site. And I think last month when we talked about intranets, we talked about Google Sites being a great platform to do it on. I think we even shared some training videos on Google Sites when we last talked on this mm-hmm. subject. And so that's what I did. I went to sites.google.com. If you have a Google account, you can get there. It may be a personal account, or it may be a Google Apps, Google Education account, whatever it is, sites.google.com is going to come up for you and allow you to add a new website. And the caveat is that you have options, and that makes things a little more difficult when there's different paths you can take. Mm-hmm. So there's something that Google calls classic Google Sites, and then there's new Google Sites. I grew up in the Google atmosphere using classic Google Sites. So my main experience is there. I haven't done as much with the new Google Sites. So that was kind of a dilemma for me, but it makes sense to me maybe to move toward the new platform, since Google tends to say, okay, we're shutting the old things down. So
right.
you go build this great intranet on a classic Google site, and you don't have any control of Google saying, nope, it's time for you to move to new Google Sites, and mm-hmm. you're gonna lose your site. So
what are the differences?
Yeah, that's what I discovered along the way. This new Google Sites is very user-friendly. It's pretty easy to add, and we'll actually have a link to share in the show notes to a Google site. It's kind of a skeleton of a Google site of what your site could look like as an admin site. And what I found more challenging is it doesn't have all the bells and whistles that are already baked into the classic Google sites. So you can't just show a folder from your Google Drive and people to be able to easily link, pick up the link and open a Google document or whatever that you have saved. Instead, you have to include a link, you know, like manually add a link to things in Google Drive or whatever. So a little more complex. And the other stumbling block, which I eventually figured out, was sharing. So new Google sites are automatically public, and it's not real obvious when you publish how to ratchet that back and make them only for a private group of people. But the share button is there. I just had to look at those settings to find out how to make the site private. So I think you could go either direction. If it were me, I like the functionality in the classic Google Sites, and I'd be happier there. But the new Google Sites can support being an intranet, and we'll have an example and probably a little video that you can watch to see some of the basics of setting up a Google site. As I did it, though, what I realized was ultimately I want to rely on Google Drive files, typically documents, but maybe spreadsheets or presentations or other things that you upload to Google Drive. You can have PDFs out there in Google Drive, all those kind of things. So ultimately, the site just became kind of like wrapping paper on top of Google Drive. And as I explored some of Pastor Gunther's examples, he had kind of boiled it down to just using Google Drive and sharing Google Drive and not really having a site on top of that to display the contents of the Google Drive, basically. So I went that route as well. And what you're going to find when you look at our links and things is that I have an example of a Google Drive folder structure that you could copy and modify to begin to use Google Drive as your intranet for your church. And so I'm not giving a real clear-cut answer. I think everybody's mileage is going to vary, but to keep it simple, at this point, I probably would recommend just using Google Drive and sharing that.
Interesting. I think the fact that Google Drive can accommodate almost any kind of file makes it a great candidate for this kind of information sharing. And then if you live in the kind of the Google Docs, Google Slides, Google Sheets world, collaboration becomes super easy. You mentioned a couple things that some might consider barriers. Well, people have to log in. Mm-hmm. They need a Google account. And I would think by and large, most people are comfortable with, you know, securing logins. And maybe most people already have Google logins for lots of different things. One thing I'm noticing looking at the links here, these links are pretty ugly to some of these to some of these sites. So I would think maybe a link shortener like bit.ly or something like that would come in handy as well, so that you're creating kind of short, memorable links that you can publish in, you know, different places and people can easily get to this, or a link to it off of your main website, maybe a members only section where they can click on it and just make sure that anybody is clicking on who's clicking on that is aware that they're going to have to log in to get access to this information. Mm-hmm. So probably have different levels, different stratospheres of content. So maybe you've got the big, you know, all the stuff, all the links available at the top level, but then as you drill down, you permission those to the different groups as well. So, and I think that's what you would do with the way you've got it set up as well.
Absolutely. And one more little easier wrapping paper, easier way to get to the things is you can create a Google Doc that just has kind of your folder structure, links right and things mm-hmm. in it. So you could link to that one Google Doc as opposed to just a Drive folder that has all the folders underneath and things like that. And then people could come to that Google Doc and use the links available. And we do have an example of that that you'll see when you follow the links from the show notes. I guess the critical piece to this, no matter what direction you go, is the permissioning, or in Google terms, sharing. And you want to be, you know, really comfortable that you have the right people having access to what they need access to. The thing about Drive is you can give them access to one particular file, a whole folder, a folder that includes all the subfolders. You know, you can get very granular as needed. So the choir director can get access to the choir folder, but not to the elders folder or whatever. That just takes somebody really owning that security piece, that sharing, and being confident that it's set up correctly and the right people have access to the right things. So That's probably the biggest learning curve. Creating documents and folders and things like that in Google Drive is pretty straightforward. We will have some videos that you can reference if you want to watch, you know, just some basic how-to stuff. But I think people will pick up on that very easily. The security, you need a couple of people probably trained and having access to everything to serve as backups of one another. But you need to really pay attention to that and maintain that regularly.
Great. I think one other thing to keep in mind is that the more kind of static links and static content you put on a page, as maybe an index page or whatever, you have to remember to keep that up to date. Mm-hmm. So I think the more that you can, you know, maybe even avoid that, maybe just referencing, I would think referencing folders and maybe have a kind of a naming convention. So the latest minutes or the latest notes or documents or your folder naming conventions themselves would be helpful as well. So
definitely
good stuff, Martin. So your experience was good.
It was. Before we leave the topic, I think it's probably worth exploring the little skeleton structure that I gave people to start with, because part of it is, what's the point of having an intranet? What kind of things would I store there? So just to give you a vision, and you could change this up, obviously, to meet your individual needs, I set up four major folders. I have events, groups, records, and worship as my four major church folders. And so under events, then I would have subfolders for things like Vacation Bible School or Mission Festival or Easter for Kids or whatever it may be, that are the major events of your church. And next, I had a folder called Groups, and there would be the folders for things like the outreach committee or the ladies' aid or the church council or the elders or whatever. So again, you can give different access to different groups of people. The records folder, a couple of folders I started with were things like attendance and shut-ins, but you could do other types of church records in that folder as well. Mm-hmm. And then finally, the worship folder examples, I had altar guild, choir, the projection people, you know, maybe you have documents you share for projection or whatever. And then the ushers all would fall under the worship folder. So just a little bit of a structure for you to play with and modify to fit your needs. You obviously aren't going to have those same exact folders, but it gives you an idea of where to start.
Could be totally flexible too, though, because that's the way the tool is made. So if you don't have those groups or if you have other needs or special projects, then yeah, you've got all the tools there you need. So,
or if you want to just start small and start with one area, that's a great way to introduce it, is just focus on one thing and then grow it over time.
Yep. One thing we didn't mention, and this would be only applicable to those in the G Suite space, there is something called team drives as well. And those allow for kind of shared, how do I best describe it? Probably shared permissioning. Sure. So rather than one owner of one file and you got to share that out to other people, you kind of can create a communal folder structure where if somebody has rights to an area, they're going to have rights to everything that goes on in there. So that's just another benefit of using G Suite, and congregations can get that through their nonprofit status. So
So you're not going to see that on just normal Google accounts.
No,
only
we just went with the basics. Mm-hmm. Yep, very good. Thank you, Sally, for your work. I'm going to be very interested to see if anybody can grab this and run with it and see what they do.
Yeah, definitely give us feedback, folks. If you're using it or have questions or ideas to improve what we're presenting here, because we depend on you guys for sure.
Yep. Let's go to our news and tech segment.
Yeah, and this was kind of all over technology news. It's a new thing from Google, believe it or not. And it is a new extension that they're providing. I actually have it glowing up here in my Chrome browser. And what it is designed to do is pick up on your login credentials to websites, and it alerts you if you are signing in with credentials that have been leaked somehow. So it encourages you to change your password to prevent hacking and things. And there have been similar things out there, but the article goes on to say that this is actually different. I think Firefox has one called Firefox Monitor. It shows a one-time alert when you navigate to a website that's been breached. But Google's actually works more proactively to check actual username and passwords entered into forms. So not just looking at what the username is, but actually checking the combination of the two. Google's taking it kind of to a next step in that regard.
So. Interesting. So if you go to a site like target.com or whatever, and you enter your username and password and want to purchase something, this is going to alert you that, hey, this username and password maybe is out there on the, you know, in the dark internet or whatever, and you know, maybe you shouldn't use that username and password combination, right?
Yep. So we have a link in the show notes to Password Checkup. It's for Google Chrome only at this point, but a Google release last week, and I think it maybe was Safer Internet Day or something that they came out with this on. So,
very good. Mm-hmm. Speaking of news, let's go to the news in Wells, and we want to remind everybody about our EdTech Lead, our Wells Education Technology and Leadership Summit coming up this summer, but about a specific thing, right, Sally?
That's right, something I'm very excited about because it is a carryover from Wells Tech Conference 2015, where we did an Ignite event, and what Ignite is an evening kind of relaxed atmosphere where attendees at the conference are encouraged to share some tech and ministry or leadership or education presentation so that others can learn from them. So these aren't your normal presenters that are going to be on tap all during the daytime sessions. This is a attendee-led event, and we're doing it in a really neat format. It's called Picha Kucha, and it's 20 slides, 20 presentations, slides for 20 seconds each. So you're kind of stretched a little bit because you have to really adhere to this timing. We put your slides on a timer, and in 20 seconds, the next slide comes up, whether you're ready for it or not. Obviously, you practice in advance to time your presentation with those slides and show us in 20 slides something exciting that's going on in your ministry. And it can be all over the place as far as topics. We're looking for 8 attendees to participate in this, and we'll have to narrow it down to 8 if we get more that throw out ideas, but there is a form on the EdTech Lead website, and of those 8 people, you're going to be in a drawing to win a Kindle Paperwhite, which is an ebook reader from Amazon, and I think being 1 in 8 is probably the best odds you'll ever get in any kind of drawing. So you have a great chance of winning a device just for being willing to share your ministry experiences. So we have a link at wellsedtechlead.com/ignite. We'll throw that in the show notes, and we encourage you to go check it out and submit your idea by May 31st for consideration.
And sign up for the conference.
Oh, yeah.
Of course,
we need you to be there as well. Definitely.
Yeah. And we still have early bird pricing, so take advantage of that.
Yep.
So I'm excited about that. That conference is going to be, what are the dates again, June?
25th through 27th,
25th
with a pre-conference day on the 24th. So if you can join us early, then tap into some of those pre-conference sessions as well. Some
great, great speakers
looking
we have
forward
in store
it.
For you. So, picks of the week.
And it's my turn. And my pick of the week is related to the work that I did to prepare for this show, particularly in comparing Google Classic sites versus new Google sites. And I found a really excellent side-by-side comparison chart on a Google site, believe it or not. It's a Google site dedicated to Google sites. And they go through the process of all the very intricate details of Google sites, features and themes and colors and fonts and navigation and site layout, editing and embedding. They tell you everything about your Google site and what you can do in Classic versus what you can do in the new Google sites. And sometimes Classic has the lead and sometimes the new Google site does, and many times the features are in both. But this definitely gives you the details on where you can do what between the two. So I thought it was very well done.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Nice companion to the conversation.
Definitely.
All right. My tip or pick of the week is actually a kind of an add-on to Trello. And we're going to be talking about Trello in this whole intranet series that we're doing as well. But there are these little almost like Chrome extensions, you know, that you can add to your Trello board that offer additional functionality. And I'll put a link in the show notes, but if you use the free Trello account, you get one free power up. If you have Trello Gold, which is $5 a month, you get three. And if you do Trello for Business, which is what we do in the Synod office, for nonprofits, I think it's about $80 a person per year. You have unlimited of these power-ups. So just to give you an idea of what these power-ups can do, one that we use quite a bit is something called Calendar. So as you put due dates on your cards in Trello, you can view them certainly on the card itself with these due dates, but then you can also get a calendar view, and I can imagine that that might be very useful for timed events or things that might go on an intranet, for instance. Another one that I use a lot, both in the office and then for my private personal Trello board, is something called Repeat. So you can create a card, and then you can set some kind of recurring timing to it. So, for instance, I have a card on my home board that says replace furnace filter, and I want to replace my furnace filter every 3 months. So I use the repeat functionality there that says, you know, show this card to me, put this card in my to-do list the first of every 3 months. So I'm looking at it now, and it's going to show up again. Right now, I don't see it. It's kind of off to the side in kind of a recurring list. But on the 1st of April, it's going to show up in my today list, and I'll be reminded that I'm going to need to replace my furnace filter or the batteries in your smoke detectors or things that, you know, come up on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. So that's just kind of a quick sampling. They have custom fields and all kinds of other automations that you can do, duplicating cards and keeping cards in sync and all kinds of other power-ups. They got a ton of them, including syncing to or connecting to OneDrive and Dropbox and Google Drive, those kinds of things. So power-ups are very, I think, useful, and they kind of take Trello to that next level if you want to add some automation or some functions that aren't right there out of the box.
And I could see Trello being something that churches would go ahead and spend a little money to invest in because mm-hmm. of what it can add to
your project your management, you know, your intranet, mm-hmm. all kinds of ways you can organize your stuff. So mm-hmm. great. Let's go to our ministry resource. And I ran across an article, maybe it was last week, entitled How to Leverage Podcasting to Reach New People. And it's from Outreach Magazine's blog, and they have a kind of a nice rundown of, well, first of all, what podcasting is, its popularity, but then kind of applying what you can do with a podcast for different ministry circumstances. They talk a little bit about how to think about it, things to consider, you know, attention spans, dialogue, trying to find the right niche content that's going to resonate with your audience. And it's just it's actually a quite extensive article, but it gives you lots of, I think, thinking ideas about ways that you could use podcasting in your particular ministry. And the bar is really low these days to get up and running with podcasting. It's basically, there's services out there, and it's really not hard at all. But the hard part is, you know, finding its purpose and then making sure that you're, you know, using it for a great ministry purpose. And this article, I think, will help you think a little bit more deeply about how you might go about doing that. So if you've never thought about podcasting, or maybe you have and just didn't quite know what end to grab or what ministry purpose there might be, this might be a good article for you.
Excellent. Well, that ties really well into our community feedback, which is our next segment, and a conversation that was just held over on the Wells Intersection page. So all of this podcast conversation is getting me really excited because there is great potential, and I think people are really beginning to explore that. So
yep.
Let me start with an email then from Charlie Ungemach, who is the man behind the Gird Up podcast. We'll have to include a link to an interview we did with Charlie, but he's doing this podcast specifically targeted for men called Gird Up. And he says, I don't know how widely or effectively podcasts are being utilized for ministry in our churches and schools, but my observation is there are a few trying to venture into the podcast world and few who are doing it effectively. I'm currently trying to convince my own church and school to utilize the technology to enhance our ministry, and I think it'll serve us well. So he's very willing to work with a group to help promote the idea of podcasting in ministry, or to teach churches or people or our teams how to do it effectively and tailor it to their ministry. So just a really cool kind of brainstorming ideas email from Charlie Ungemach, and we really appreciate that. It was really parallel to a conversation that was held recently. I think we mentioned it on last week's show that over on Wells Intersections on Facebook, Pastor Aderman, who moderates the page, had shared a link to the podcast called Raised with Jesus, done by Pastor Peter Hagen, a devotional podcast from Resurrection Lutheran Church in Maumee, Ohio. And further discussion was held in the thread. Pastor Hagen eventually shared how he produces his podcast, which is pretty cool. He does it with GarageBand, has the music and everything to mix right into it as he's recording. So really neat conversation there. And ultimately, he made this comment. He said, I think the primary elements behind congregational podcasting is simplicity, content, and regularity. It needs to be simple enough to produce in a short amount of time with minimal editing, offer content that is engaging and edifying so that it's worthwhile, and regular enough to be predictable and fit into a person's repeated routine. So I think those are really good points he made there, and maybe I'll get Pastor Hagen and Charlie Ungemach in contact, but if there are others that are interested in being part of that conversation, maybe Wells Intersections is a great place to go, or just let us know and we can help you reach out to these guys. Oh,
very good.
One more mention. Somebody actually asked me, do we have a list of all these podcasts? So a quick plug for our Wells Tech Wiki, where we do have a page dedicated to non-worship podcast, and it lists both Raised with Jesus and Gird Up podcast, among others. Cana Bound is one that's been around for a while. We talked to Philip Wells about that one years ago, and it's still happening on a regular basis. Pastor Don Patterson down in Austin, Texas, has A Reason for Hope that's regularly released and available through iTunes. So there are these podcasts are out there. Of course, there's Wells Tech. People can subscribe to it as well. So check out the non-worship podcast page for links to those. And if you have a podcast that we should have listed there, then create a wiki account and get it added, please.
Great.
Mm-hmm. All right. Also referencing a discussion on Wells intersections, there was a recent discussion about captioning video for church services. And different people came back and forth about whether Facebook has automatic captioning of video and different services that are out there for captioning video. Two that were mentioned specifically are Rev and I don't have it in front of me. SpeedScriber is the other one. Both of those are pay for services that will add that will transcribe your video content. In all cases, you probably want to check that transcription because they aren't perfect. But it was also mentioned that YouTube will do that for free. There is that capability with YouTube as well. But you're going to have to, you know, review the transcription and make sure it was transcribed correctly in most cases. But definitely a value add to your video production is to have captioning can reach a whole new audience that way.
Yep. Just to give you a little bit more information on rev.com, it's rev.com. They offer transcription and captions. Those are two different things, at least two different pricing models. Okay. Actually, they are the same price. Transcription would be converting audio and video to text. So you would send them your audio recording or video, and then they would transcribe it $1 per minute. So they'd send you back the text. So that's good if you want to, you know, make your sermon available or whatever through a blog or on your website or whatever, if you didn't write it, for instance. And then captions would be captioning your video. So they would you'd give them your video, and then they would put the captioning right in it. And then again, that is $1 per minute. So I think there are prices that I talked to them maybe a couple years ago, and they were giving me some nonprofit pricing. So these prices actually may be kind of their rack rate. So if you're interested in something like this, it would be worth calling them and talking to their rep to determine if you can get it at a cheaper price, if this is something that interests you.
Excellent. Good stuff. All right, more community feedback, Martin. This time it's you that's going to share about the
Daily
Devotion.
Yeah, we got a note from somebody in the UK who saw the Together article about Amazon Alexa now supporting the Wells Daily Devotion. And she was asking whether it was available outside of the U.S. So I had to do a little investigating. And the way these flash briefings work or these skills work is that they are available outside of the U.S. if the person enables if they're English-speaking in an English-speaking country, so the U.K. is. But you have to enable U.S. English in the app somehow, and since I don't live outside of the country, I couldn't try this. Maybe I can find a video maybe about how to do this, but somehow you have to enable U.S. English content to be able to get these flash briefings or skills to come up in your Alexa app. So give that a try. And it sounds like the only way you can get it if you're in a foreign-speaking country, Germany or Mexico or whatever, is if we would provide a Mexican or Spanish version or a German version, those kinds of things, which we aren't at this point.
You're not translating the Daily Devotions these
days. Not right now.
All those so German-speaking
That'd be not
pastors.
A bad idea if we had a need for it. So.
Sure. Sure. Cool stuff. We're just going all different
Going
directions
global.
With that devotion.
Right.
That's pretty cool.
Yep, it's nice. Get the word out there. It's important. Another follow-up, and this is something we mentioned maybe a couple months ago. Costa Maya Ministries is a group of individuals down in the southern Yucatan Peninsula who have some great ministry opportunities going on. Pastor Valesky is down there. Missionary Valesky is down there working. And they have a position open for an administrative manager. We'll put a link in the show notes to the job description. But basically, it's a one-year commitment with a mutually agreeable, you know, further work if things if that works out. But basically somebody to manage the office, the kind of the operations of the ministry down there, and great people to work with, wonderful setting. I've been down there. This would be for somebody who speaks Spanish fairly well. So if you are so inclined, this is something you may want to check out or pass along to somebody who may as well. So take advantage of that if it's intriguing to you.
Includes a furnished apartment and utilities as well as Wi-Fi. So go work on your tan vehicle, while you help the ministry.
So, yep.
Good stuff.
Right. It's right on the water, the Caribbean. So beautiful setting.
Mm-hmm. All right. One more thing to mention in community feedback. This was an email we received from Brian Wickland, who's on the school board, I believe, at Lamb of God in West Allis, Wisconsin. And he's investigating options for technology in their school. He says they currently have Chromebooks used primarily in the upper grades and some laptops connected to their projectors. But their early childhood and elementary grades have an interest in investing in some kind of interactive touch screen. And so he's looking for recommendations or feedback from other schools or settings where you've done this in an early childhood setting or elementary age. What kind of technology you're using there, if you have any recommendations of vendors and things like that. You certainly can share that through Wells Tech or get in touch with the school board there in West Allis as well. But we have the contact information if you have information to share.
Great. Speaking of getting in touch with Wells Tech, we'd love to get in touch with you if you have something to share with us, comment, feedback, suggestions for future shows, interviews, those kinds of things. Just go to our show notes page, wellstech.wells.net. You'll see all the links at the top for different social networks that we frequent and different ways to get in touch with us. The Wells Tech Google Groups is listed there. Lots of great people chatting about technology. WellsTech@wells.net's the email address you can use to get in touch with us as well. So take advantage of that. One final plug that if you are a listener, please give some thought to maybe leaving some feedback in your podcasting tool, whether that's iTunes or wherever that may be. That increases our chances of other people finding us and joining the conversation as well. So that would be much appreciated.
Definitely.
Let's go to our video of the week.
Yep. Wrap up the show with a video of the week. This week, we will not disappoint. We have two videos of the week, both related to Google Drive and permissioning. So if you want to learn the basics of Google Drive, we have a video recommendation for that, as well as one on how to share files and folders in Google Drive. Sharing is their word for security permissions. So both of these are short videos that because it's not hard to do, so you should be encouraged and easy to get up to speed on. So check them out.
Very nice. Sally, we're going to do this again next week, Lord willing. What are we going to talk about?
Well, we're going to talk about that conference that is rapidly approaching, Martin. June 25th through 27th, we'll be in Wisconsin Dells at the Kalahari Resort for Wells Education, Technology, and Leadership Conference. And we have an amazing lineup of technology speakers that is just one part of the great conference planned. So we're going to talk to some of those technology speakers and just look at what all you can learn at EdTech Lead this summer.
Very nice. Thank you all for joining us once again. We really do appreciate you taking the time to listen to us chat about ministry topics. Again, join the conversation if you would wish to do that. But again, come back next week for more conversation. Thanks and have a great week. Bye-bye.